says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to Nastan anila nijone go shabotya, nijone go shabotya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Oh, hey, yeah. Oh, hey, yeah.
From Hopi singer-songwriter Clark Tanahungva off his Canyon Records CD entitled Hear My Song, Hear My Prayer. The name of the song was We Dance in Beauty. In Hopi culture, as in many indigenous people's life ways, traditional dance is often part of ceremony. Dance is a way of offering prayers to the Creator in all of our relations. As we say in my native language, Kanon Wantakwasin, referring to all sacred life, the animals and plants, fish and marine life, the winged beings, the stones and the earth, all of the waters and sky above us, all of our relations. We native peoples dance as an expression of gratitude for the sacred gift of life. We dance as a way of asking for peace, justice, and well-being of all of our relations. Kinon Wantakwasin. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Today's program focuses on creating a culture of peace throughout the world by speaking with Dot Maver, Executive Director of the U.S. Peace Alliance. Peace is an important concern of Yat Kinishi Native Center and all Indigenous peoples. Yat Kinishi Native Center's Ganili Goat program is a specific project focusing on peace education and conflict mediation, based upon traditional indigenous knowledge and practices that continue to keep native confederacies living in peace with Mother Earth and with each other's tribal nations. Native cultures of peace are maintained by traditional laws, codes of behavior, and ceremonies that are guided by our clan mothers and peace chiefs. In many cases, our Indian confederacies have treaties with one another that ensures peace and contains mechanisms for dispute resolution. Our native nations also send ambassadors to each other's councils in order to keep communications open, which maintains peace and friendship between our peoples. These indigenous ethics are wisdoms which the so-called mainstream dominant society needs to respect and learn from. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, the Peace Alliance is a wonderful grassroots international movement to promote peace. A primary focus of this movement is encouraging governments throughout the world to establish departments of peace as well as a peace academy to train leaders dedicated to peace in future generations. In October 2005, there was an international peace gathering in London, England, the first People's Summit for Departments of Peace. Before we listen to today's program guest, Dot Maver, we will now share the declaration from that important international summit. Quote, First People's Summit for Departments of Peace, London, October 19, 2005. Today, we announce the launch of an international initiative for the creation of departments of peace in governments throughout the world. Violence of all kinds is increasing. There is an urgent need to find responsible solutions, expanding on past and present peace-building successes. This international initiative will both provide resources and support for existing national departments of peace campaigns and assist new ones as they appear in other countries. While the exact role of the department will differ in each country, its basic functions will be the same: to foster a culture of peace, to research, articulate, and help bring about nonviolent solutions to conflicts at all levels, and to provide resources for training in peace building and conflict transformation to people everywhere. We, the undersigned, joyfully vow to support and encourage each other to share information, to enrich each other's experience, to listen to one another, and to celebrate our commonalities and differences in our journey together towards a culture of peace, unquote. And that was the proclamation from the First People's Summit for Departments of Peace, London, England, October 19th, 2005. It is now my great honor and privilege to welcome today's program guest, Dot Maver, Executive Director of the U.S. Peace Alliance.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on the show with you, Donette.
Thank you, ma'am.
And yes, my name is Dot Maver. I am the Executive Director of the Peace Alliance. We are campaigning for a U.S. Department of Peace, and we are also participating in the Global Alliance for Ministries and Departments of Peace, which now has 24 countries with representatives and working groups who are calling for structures in their governments that reflect a culture of peace.
Speaking with you on the telephone, today being September 11, 2006, the fifth anniversary of the historic 9/11 violence, I am reflecting on the state of the world here in the first early years of the new millennium, where the hope of world peace still seems a far-off reality. Dot, would you please comment on the importance of governments to put a greater emphasis on peace rather than their huge focus on military power?
Indeed, and actually we could take a great lesson from indigenous brothers and sisters as we look back at the founding fathers of this country, the United States of America, and the input from so many nations. I've noticed on your website as well the programs and the various links all talking about primarily the same thing, how we live together sustainably in community. And so when we talk about our military, you know, the military was initially and still is very focused on peace and peacekeeping. And it is our position that it is really time for all of us to call for a focus in our government, in our society, in our communities on peace building, where what we are about and what we think and speak and how we act is all based on the principles of cooperation and of our interconnectedness and essential oneness.
Do you find that throughout the world there are more people who are beginning to adopt this cultural understanding, the importance of living in respect for all peoples? In my language, we say, Kanan Wantakwas, in all the relations. It's really a reverence for Mother Earth. It's really having what in English I call Earth ethics. Do you find, generally speaking, as we're living in the new millennium, that more people throughout the world are beginning to see the need of having a universal respect for peace with each other?
Yes. Yes, I do, Arnes. And I must say I am very blessed to travel extensively in this country and internationally. And I will say that it is my experience that peace is breaking out all over at this point. And yet what is most evident to us through our media resources today, at least in this country, is the look of violence and a cycle of violence and destruction that actually is not the primary way that people are choosing to interact with one another throughout the world. So it is a very hopeful time, and I will point to the Pacific Rim in particular and point to the Philippines, where President Arroyo has invited a number of civil society, NGOs, and groups like the Global Alliance and the Global Partnership for the Prevention of Armed Conflict to help coordinate an historic summit in the Philippines in February of 2007, where the Philippines and the Solomon Islands and Georgia and South Africa and other countries who have proven through putting structures in their government post-war and post-serious conflict in their countries, they've proven and are proving that it is possible in the Philippines with a six-strand peace process, in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, that it is indeed possible to heal through dialogue and through understanding and really listening to one another. Perhaps if we could all learn to use the talking stick, that would be a very good thing in my mind, my way of thinking.
Yes.
At any rate, so I will answer that a definitive yes. It is a very hopeful time we are living in spite of appearances.
Today, September 11th. Later on this month, on the 16th, if I understand correctly, there's going to be a nationwide walk for peace encouraged by the Peace Alliance to hopefully have people in all over the United States come out and peacefully demonstrate their concern for peace and justice and to help raise funds for the Peace Alliance to continue this public information and education campaign. Would you talk about the National Peace Alliance Walk and how listeners can join in?
Yes, of course. And the best way to join in is to go to our website, www.thepeacealliance.org. And there's information. People have registered for peace walks in over 85 cities throughout the United States. So we are quite pleased with the response, and we are really calling, as you know, within our Peace Alliance to help create what it is we want, understanding that energy follows thought, and our intention means so much that we are focused not on what we are against, but rather on what we want. We are clear about naming what is working and what is not working, but that is simply naming it, and then what we focus on is what we are actually creating. So these are walks for peace, calling for a culture of peace, calling for a department of peace in very pragmatic and practical ways, actually situated in between September 11th and September 21st, which is the United Nations International Day of Peace, for good reason. September 11th actually begins an 11 days of unity countdown to the September 21st day, where the UN resolution calls for a day of global ceasefire and nonviolence for the children of the world. What I would suggest is that I keep seeing 1 billion people pledging and actually living a day of personal nonviolence. Imagine that. That's the tipping point on this planet. So we are calling for these peace walks and encouraging everyone to participate however they choose for September 21st, the Peace Day, the International Day of Peace. And on that day, people around the world will take one moment of silence for peace at noontime, wherever they are.
And I know here in what we call Pahiogi, the Western Everglades, now called Southwest Florida, our local district group is going to have two very fine walks, and I'm looking forward to participate with that.
Excellent.
Dot, I mentioned earlier in my questions in our conversation today the importance and the role of young people in the movement as well as women in the movement. As a person of color, I like the word person of culture, quote minority. I'm an American Indian, as it's called in English, indigenous person, Native American. I've spent much of my life trying to be a bridge between indigenous peoples and people of color and what might in English be called a more mainstream, predominantly white Anglo community, especially in the field of the environment. I feel it very important that the peace movement, with all its good intentions, still has not done a very good job in outreach to what in English is called minorities, to people of color, African American, Asian, Pacific Islanders, Hispanic, Native Americans, and even what you might call in English poor white people, like in Appalachia and other parts of the country, those who are oftentimes marginally considered in the political mainstream. What is your thoughts about improving the peace movement's outreach and involvement in equal participation in a real serious way with all peoples?
Well, as we began the discussion the other day, Arnes, I am so grateful that you not only bring it up, but offer yourself as a bridge as well. I think it's absolutely essential, and I think in order for us to truly live together in a world of peace and sustainability and justice, we must find ways to come together as you are describing. And I would appreciate hearing from you what thoughts you have in that regard. Serious indications of how we might go about making this happen, that we are more representative through all the different areas of what we'll call the peace movement.
Thank you. To answer you briefly, and this is something that, as I said to you on the phone informally when we just talked the other day, Yad Kiddush Native Center really would like to try to assist the Peace Alliance with that. Taking a lesson from the environmental justice movement, which I've had the honor to be involved with from near its beginning, I think really bringing together representatives of people of color with some of the mainstream peace movement people, such as yourself and those in the Peace Alliance, is a very important first step. And the environmental justice community established what's called the 17 Principles of Environmental Justice, which grew out of the historic 1991 First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit that was held in what's now called Washington, D.C., under the chairmanship of my friend Reverend Ben Chavis and others. And I think the Peace Alliance could learn a lot from that gathering, which brought all the sacred colors of the human family together, the red, the white, the black, and the yellow, brown, and those of us of mixed blood together. And that's my short answer. And I think it is hard, without being rude here on the phone, that for a culture that has been, in a sense, in power for so long in this hemisphere for over 500 years, to give up what in English is called white supremacy. White supremacy is so ingrained in European-American culture that people are not always aware of how it manifests itself. And I don't think many people deliberately want to segregate or deliberately want to discriminate. But if you go to, say, some of the meetings that I've participated in, where there might be only one or two other people of color there, it's very difficult sometimes for Anglo people to really even think of asking the opinion of us people of culture in the room. And it will take some time. I really believe in what a lot of the work that the Dalai Lama has been doing and other peacemakers throughout the world are bringing in a diversity of people. So that's my short answer to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And I accept your gracious invitation to work together to not only learn about these ways, but to put some of them into practice sooner rather than later. And you've given me a couple of ideas. You probably heard me jotting some notes here in terms of how we actually encourage those who are organizing within the Peace Alliance right now to be certain that the invitation is there and that the consciousness is there. I think you're quite right, and I don't take that personally at all. I'm very grateful that we're able to have this dialogue, actually.
Thank you.
Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds? Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Yes, who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's there? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. Talking about a revolution, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the
Music from singer-songwriter Tracy Chapman of her Elektra record CD. The name of that classic song is Talking About a Revolution. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad-Kiddishi Native Center. My guest today is Executive Director of the U.S. Peace Alliance, Dot Maver. The Peace Alliance is an international movement to promote a culture of peace throughout the world. A primary focus of the alliance is encouraging all governments of the world to establish departments of peace. The term peace to me as an indigenous person encompasses far more than a narrow definition of ending war and preventing military conflict, as important as that is. Peace is a relationship of how we human beings live with Mother Earth and with all life, all the relations, Kinon Wontogwisin. Peace means having reverence for the planet. Peace is protecting our biosphere and living with as little impact to the environment. Peace means respect for the rights, well-being, sovereignty, and self-determination of all peoples. Peace means the eradication of all forms of violence and injustices, poverty, socioeconomic equality, cultural racial discrimination, abuse towards women and children, xenophobia, and intolerance towards other cultures and religions. Peace is a cultural lifeway. Dot, would you please share your thoughts about what I've just said about the term peace?
And thank you for this question as well, and I'm in total agreement that for me, peace, it's not the opposite of war. It's presence of truth and justice. And I actually don't see that we may end up without conflict. I think conflict at this time in life is virtually inevitable. Now, eventually, maybe that will be different, but right now in life, out here in this world, conflict is part of life. Violence does not have to be. And certainly, violence is not an appropriate choice to resolve conflict. And so, when I talk about peace, I am not talking about anything accepting of the way things are and trying to quell conflict in a way that represses or suppresses or ignores or denies, but rather a very active dynamic that where we learn to sustain life by dealing with conflict in very practical and loving and understanding and nonviolent, peaceful ways. And that is a part of our skill development that we have a ways to go with yet, Arnes. And
yes,
that's why this, one of the reasons that I do what I do and call for a Department of Peace in this country and structures and governments throughout the world is that we need a partner at a level in our society that helps provide nonviolent communication, skill sets for our emergency services personnel, for our children to learn to de-escalate conflict and deal with abuse and domestic violence, etc. Many of our police and firefighters throughout this country right now, 50 to 80% of their police and fire runs, they end up dealing with domestic violence.
Yes.
So, and our children, our youth, they need mediation skills, communication skills, conflict resolution skills. So I agree with you. Those things are essential. And so peace is really a shift in our attitude as a culture for me. It permeates everything.
Thank you, Dot. And I also would continue this concept by also adding that to me, peace is also dealing with and eradicating poverty and malnutrition throughout the world, because I think one of the most worst forms of violence is the violence inflicted upon human beings as a result of colonialism and as a result of, for example, multinational corporations who unfortunately now have much more of a global appetite to exploit the lands and peoples and so-called natural resources of the planet And I'm very much afraid that sometimes people in the peace movement, and this is a generalization, I don't like generalizations, but for conversation's sake, sometimes I think people need to broaden the understanding of the concept of peace to understand that it also deals with democracy and the eradication of poverty. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Arnes, I would agree with that. And I would go so far as to say that until each and every one of us help see to the sustaining meeting of needs of everyone on this planet. And that, I'm not talking about absolute equality, but
yes,
I am talking about everyone's needs being met. We will not have peace until that happens.
Yes.
Dot, I would like to express my appreciation to you and all those people throughout the world who dedicate themselves to creating a culture of peace, working for peace, social and economic justice, human rights, fighting against globalization, and the military-industrial complex is not always easy, especially in the political climate of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld-Rice administration, with such things as the Patriot Act or the infiltration and spying on peace and environmental groups. I myself have experienced some problems over the years as an environmental, social justice, and indigenous rights activist. In many ways, this is nothing new. If one knows the history of U.S. government actions against the civil rights movement, the FBI's COINTELPRO program against the American Indian movement, such as the case of our Native American political prisoner brother Leonard Peltier, as example, or say the intimidation and jailing of peace activists who protest the Pentagon School of the Americas and the U.S. history of brutal involvement in what's now called Latin America, which I saw firsthand in the 1980s as a journalist in Central America, it should be no surprise that being a peace and justice activist can have serious consequences. I spend a lot of time involved with farm worker justice issues, since I have many friends who are with the Coalition of Mockley Workers here in Southwest Florida. It can be very dangerous to persons taking on large corporate agricultural interests here in the South. There is a lot of police harassment of the largely Hispanic and Caribbean people here in Southwest Florida around Immokalee, as example. Dot, have you or other folks you may know have had problems with being peace activists? Have you seen how the Department of Homeland Security and the so-called U.S. Justice Department been working to weaken civil rights, such as what is happening to Islamic people in America?
Thank you for the question, Arnes, and it touches my heart. I recently spoke at the American Muslim Voice Conference in California, where Samina Fahim Sundas, the founder and president of American Muslim Voice, so graciously invited many of us to share our views, and we heard from the Muslim community painfully many of their experiences. I must say that I have not personally experienced that degree of pain or obstruction that I hear described by so many others. And I will say candidly to you that we are only a little over a year and a half old in our present form as the Peace Alliance. And having said that, I would also like to point out that one of the things as American citizens that I call myself to consistently, so that we do not continue to repeat a cycle of violence and a cycle of obstruction and some of the atrocities that have happened in this country, is to look for where things are working in our government, regardless of where they are or what, you know, how little they may seem in a given moment. And I will say that right now within our Pentagon, there is a peace directive that has come out of the Pentagon that not many people are aware of, that actually speaks to peace building and global security in terms of building infrastructure rather than destroying infrastructure, that I think more of us need to be calling our leaders to come in line with. It's coming out of our own State Department and our own Pentagon.
Well,
and that the United States Institute for Peace is also doing some good work, and they do it on less than $30 million a year, and that it is really time to put our resources into peace building and building an infrastructure for peace rather than into so many things that continue to keep us in a culture of violence.
Yes. I would like to ask you, where you mentioned economics, to let our worldwide listeners know that the U.S. campaign calling for the creation of a U.S. Department of Peace at a cabinet level, as well as an institution or several institutions like a peace academy to kind of be similar to the military academies. Mm-hmm. Financially is not really a major burden at all. What is the target request for the budget for the peace movement to establish a Department of Peace and a peace academy?
We are calling for the equivalent of 2% of the defense budget, which at this point in time would be somewhere between $8 and $10 billion, which when you look at the billions of dollars we are spending in certain areas of our federal budget right now, you're right, it is not a lot of money, considering that, as Van Jones at the Ella Baker Center in Oakland will tell us, he has a program called Books Not Bars.
Yes.
And you may be familiar with that. And so Van would tell us that in given a fiscal year, we look at one youth in jail is the equivalent, it's equal to two youth in Yale. And when we look at the Ohio Dispute Resolution Commission, and it's the only state-funded program of its type, Arness, where they are providing excellent services throughout Ohio in conflict resolution and other skills. And we know that it is so much less. An outrageous comparison of something like $12 a year versus $200 a year to either teach our children these skills or let them go the way of violence and the discipline necessary once it's out of control. So there is no question that this is a fiscally pragmatic an appropriate way to move in the direction of our government.
It certainly is, and it's kind of like the precautionary principle in the environmental field, that it's not only biologically important, but economically makes much more sense to try to prevent pollution than trying to deal with it later. And it astounds me that, still, maybe I'm wrong here, but it astounds me that the vast majority of Americans have not connected the concept that national security is not building aircraft carriers and B-1 bombers, but is ensuring everyone has access to safe water, healthy food,
yes,
a fertile forest, a nice, safe, clean home, you know, a home that is free of violence, that is really what is national security, not trying to build a moat and castle, you know, and kind of keep people from invading you. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
I do agree with that, Arness, and I would submit that many, if not most of us in this country at least, our entire economic viability is based on the military-industrial complex. We are talking about a significant shift in our culture, which is why we are so grateful for these kinds of opportunities to really help educate and raise awareness about the very things you're talking about. And it will be choices made by each of us. Because right now, our members of Congress are much more likely, even if they are in agreement that peace is something that we should be focused on, they will be the first ones to fight against and argue against closing down any kind of place that focuses on building military
Yes. Armies
or planes or whatever. And who's going to argue that if that's what's putting food on the table for people? And so we stand at a crossroads in the United States of
Yes. America.
And thank you for saying it so beautifully, so articulately. And it will be choices made by each of us. But what I say to our youth all the time, and what they are really beginning to put out there themselves, is that we need peace-building professions and peace professionals, so that when we say Department of Peace, or we say peace-building, or we say peacekeeping, that's the military's job, we immediately think of the equivalence in our neighborhoods and local communities. It's a stretch of the imagination right now, and it shouldn't be. Whereas when we think of Department of Education, we immediately come right down through to superintendents and administrators and teachers and teachers' aides. Why isn't it like that for peace?
Yes. Well, as you were just commenting, it's a little ironic that one of the books I'm reading now is the bestseller about the multinational company Bechtel.
Yes.
And it really goes back actually to the 1900s and how powerful the military-industrial complex is. And I'm wondering, what is your thoughts about how, as Eisenhower warned, the power and might of the military-industrial complex. And I think we see that very clearly, especially in the present administration with Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, among others, in the energy industry. How do American people deal with multinational companies in this, what I would call shadow government that really does not want peace because economically there's plenty of good money to be made supplying the army with tools of his trade, paraphrasing that favorite song of mine.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Thank you for the question. We are indeed living Dwight Eisenhower's warning, are we not?
Yes.
And yet Bechtel in South America was unable to hold on to the privatization of water.
Yes.
It actually went through and then was taken back and ended up stepping away from that. Why? Because the people, it has to do with the political will of the people. And that is what is awakening. It's a slumbering giant in this great country. And as the political will of the people and the voice of the people comes alive, and I trust we will see that in the November elections, big time in this country, Arness, and we will see a choice made by citizens, by individuals, because sometimes we think that we don't make a difference. But the truth is, every single one of us makes a difference, and together we are very powerful.
Yes.
So I have great hope as we move along here, and I think that as more and more of us choose to support in our own lives, well, put it this way, if there's a restaurant in town that you really like, you keep going there, and you pay your money there, and you eat your food there, and you talk about it to others. And that restaurant becomes very popular and very successful, and hopefully the quality of the food stays good, and they do quite well.
Yes.
Where are we in our communities right now? That, for me, what I hear all the time are the complaints about what is wrong and what we should not be doing. Where are we choosing to put our energy, to put our dollars, to put our day-to-day activities? And that's what it's going to take, is every one of us making those conscious choices, greening our homes, making choices about the cars that we purchase, making choices about the food that we eat, more local if possible. And I could go on and on.
Yes.
I know you know all these things. I have learned many of these things through you, if I might say it that way. And I am very grateful for that. And those are the choices that we face, and I am very hopeful as I travel and meet with people because so many of us are waking up.
Glad you did bring up the topic of water and privatization efforts, especially in what's now called Central and South America, which we indigenous peoples use the term Abiyala, that beautiful land of Central South America, that whole movement that is really flourishing now actually is an indigenous peoples movement, and I'm very proud to say that that's an example of how other cultures can learn from the knowledge and wisdom and activism of indigenous peoples who are on the front line of fighting, especially privatization of world's water. Let me conclude by first saying thank you so much for your time, and let me ask, as I do all our guests, is there any last subject or thought you might like to share with our worldwide audience that I've not invited you to speak upon?
You know, I think I would like to end with a quote, if I might, from Nicholas Roerich. Positive creativeness is the fundamental quality of the human spirit. Let us welcome all those who, surmounting personal difficulties, propel their spirits to the task of peace building, thus ensuring a radiant future.
We all need. are the seventh generation. Our ancestors and elders took special care in their decision making to ensure us a prosperous future. Respect and honor towards our elders. We hold the truth, the secrets, and lessons of the life and of our past. It is time for us to conduct ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you.
Yeah. You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The song you heard prior to our Yatkidishi Native Center program identification was the Leonard Peltier Honor Song from American Indian Movement leader Dennis Banks' cassette entitled Still Strong, which he gifted me when Dennis spoke here in Southwest Florida for the Bring Leonard Peltier Home national campaign. Our brother Leonard Peltier has now been falsely imprisoned by the FBI for 30 years. For the benefit of our worldwide listeners, Leonard Peltier, a member of the American Indian Movement, was very concerned for the well-being of Mother Earth and all peoples. Leonard dedicated himself to defending Native peoples' cultural lifeways. He is now illegally being held at the U.S. Penitentiary in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. I sincerely ask everyone to visit the Leonard Peltier website to learn about the injustices done to Leonard and ways in which you can help the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee free Leonard Peltier. The LPDC website is www.leonardpeltier.net. Once again, the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee website is www.leonardpeltier.net. You can also write to the LPDC at Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, 2626 N Mesa, number 132, El Paso, Texas, 79902, USA. Once again, you can also write to the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. The address is LPDC 2626 N Mesa, number 132, El Paso, Texas, 79902, USA. We also featured Mohawk singer-songwriter Howard Lyons. The song you heard was entitled For Our Seventh Generation from Howard Lyons' Sound of America record CD, Spirit Walk. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. I want to again thank Dot Maver, Executive Director of the U.S. Peace Alliance, for sharing her spirit with us on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Please visit the U.S. Peace Alliance website for more information. The website is www.thepeacealliance.org. Once again, the U.S. Peace Alliance website is www.thepeacealliance.org. We shall conclude today's broadcast with John Lennon's song, Give Peace a Chance. Thank you for listening to Yatkidishi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kanan Wontakwasin, to all of our relations.
One, two, three, four.